Look at the time. Look at the time.
Look at the time. It is Hut in the Clock.
It is Hut in the Clock here on 102.5 The Game. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. Caroline on vacation this week. She's missing out on all the fun. I hope she's having fun on vacation. Mm-hmm. How could it beat working during this time in March Madness? This is an outstanding time of the year. The weather is great. Spring training baseball, brackets are out, Predators on a roll, NFL free agency going. I mean, come on, Caroline, this better be one heck of a vacation. We are going to have a lot of questions when she returns next week. Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. Jonathan Hutton is up next with us. We're broadcasting from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. Hutton, what's going on?
Willie, great to be on with you guys this week. D-Mace, hope things are well. I'm curious about your biggest upset in the bracket. I'm going to compare it to mine.
Hmm. Ooh, see, I have biggest not officially. Upset. I wait. I'm going to fill mine out tonight because in most challenges, you don't have to get the ones right. You can wait and see who wins the, you know, those 50-50 games. How about Virginia's performance last night, by the way? Nice job coming up with a 40-plus. In the NCAA tournament, man, you talk about rising up. Remember this guy? They lost to a 16 seed a couple years ago. Yes. Came back the next year and won the whole thing, and then they put up what did they end up with? 44 last night.
The best line I saw was Virginia basketball is college basketball's version of Iowa football.
Iowa football, that's right.
Yeah, pretty much so.
Those that watch Tennessee and Iowa in the bowl game can relate for sure. And if you watched Iowa in the Big Ten championship game, yeah, they struggled to score as well. So
my biggest upset is Western Kentucky over Marquette.
Am I stupid? Okay. Why? I'll tell you what. I like Marquette. I've watched Marquette play. Now, they have to incorporate their star player.
They're banged up, too. Yeah.
They are banged up, and I think they're going to get their guy back. But the thing about Marquette, as I was watching them, they're still pretty good even without him. But I am intrigued about Western, I have to say. And that one... That was a great win for them because I know they have great fans up there. They love that team, and it's been a while since they've been in there, so I'd love to see that.
I think go ahead, Mace.
No. I was about to say my biggest upset. I think it will be. Do I want to go with that Kansas? That Kansas matchup. Kansas is beat up too. Kansas is a beat up team against Samford. Yeah. That's a game that I can see Samford winning.
I agree. I do think Kansas is very beatable for sure. Mm. So Chad's okay, make the case for Western though. That would be big. A 15 seed, or is it 14 or 15?
Just the fact
it's a 15. Marquette has got, and they've got Tyler Kolek is the guy that I'm talking about here. He's missed a few games here. Very good player. They think he's going to be. I guess you don't know until I haven't looked recently to say this. And Western Kentucky's a pretty decent sized dog here.
Well, and look, there's a couple of things that just stay on my mind. First, we've only seen the 15 win over the 2-11 times. But haven't we seen it the last three tournaments?
It seems like every year it's more and more likely.
And I think the parity is greater, but the times I've watched Marquette, Willie, they have looked like crap. Granted, one of those games is UConn.
Right. They've been destroyed by UConn a couple of times here.
Top of mind for me.
Yeah.
I can't help it there. I also want to point to the same goes for Alabama with me. I'm taking Charleston in that game. Those are my two biggest upsets. And Withrow would agree with you guys, by the way, of Samford over Kansas.
Okay. And Charleston, that's a name to watch. Charleston, of course, going back years, has always been a really solid mid-major program. It's kind of like Belmont, and so their coach, you hear, is in the mix or could be in the mix for the Vanderbilt job. So that's another reason maybe to keep an eye on them.
That's good. Yes, and look, other than that, I'm going chalk for the most part. I'm going with the brands,
which is always dangerous.
Not necessarily one seeds, but when I say chalk, my final four is UConn, Arizona, Kentucky, and Purdue. I mean, I'm going with the teams that are traditionally there.
Arizona seems to be a team that there's a lot of skepticism on. So why do you like them?
Well, I just like their path. I love the story of Long Beach State, by the way, with their coach.
Oh, yeah. Dan Monson actually was the coach at Gonzaga years ago when they got started, mm-hmm. before they became a perennial. He was the guy that kind of got it started, and then he left, and Mark Few took over, and Mark Few's been there ever since. But Dan Monson is the coach, mm-hmm. at Long Beach State. He was basically, they agreed to mutually part ways. And then they won the conference tournament.
They went on a 5-game losing streak. And they announced that he wasn't going to return. Then they went to the tournament and they won. They won the Big West, and the players just started playing for him. I mean, I guess that's good and bad. They got to that point. But I love. And then you know.
So do you rescind your do you rescind it? Like, okay, yeah, we're gonna fire, but we're not gonna fire you.
And he's been there like 17 years.
Yeah.
What is going to happen? Are they going to make up? Are they going to renew their vows?
I don't know. I mean, beat Arizona and they will. To me, that storyline is March Madness. That is made for that storyline there. And then Grand Canyon, too, is a cool one to root for. But I didn't pull the trigger there.
Mm. All right. Now that you brought up the brackets, Hutt, before we get into the football.
Yeah. Oh, I love this time of year.
Your perspective, because this gets thrown out there every year, and I sometimes try to remind Tennessee fans of what life was like for a long time when
they don't want to hear that, Willie. They don't want to hear it.
They don't want to hear it, but I'm just trying to balance the discussion sometimes, mm-hmm. when you get this really one-sided, Barnes can't win in the tournament. We got to get rid of Barnes. He can't win. We can't do well in the tournament.
Well, he can't.
But making the Sweet 16 is nothing to sneeze at. It's hard. Just like when people would say, Kevin Stallings, Kevin Stallings, why do we have Kevin Stallings? He can't be. How good does Kevin Stallings' tenure look now?
Oh, my.
When you compare it to what has happened since, right? And so just try to keep a level head when you come out with these, quote, hot takes. But that being said, what kind of pressure is on Rick Barnes in this tournament with this team that he's got?
I think there is. I mean, this is his best team, in my opinion. Dalton Knecht. I mean, he's a guy that can carry you to a Final Four. I mean, he's an NBA player playing in college basketball. He's 23, playing against the average NBA player who's 19 or 20 in their rookie season. So, I mean, I look at that, plus the way they have played, played defense. I mean, they can make the run, and the ride that the fans have been on, I don't blame them for having extremely high expectations, considering where they were prior to Rick Barnes, but how things have been built and what we've seen this season against good competition. And we've seen them head-to-head against the top teams, and some of them anyway. And I what was a great conference run for them and for several of the SEC schools that have, ever since Greg Sankey mandated that the teams and programs are going to get better at basketball and invest in coaching. I mean, the coaching in the league is extraordinary. With that being said, though, Willie, like the Sweet 16 run, getting past like St. Peter's, Kentucky's got to be looking at that draw going, hey, we know about that, the 15 versus the 2. And then on top of that, Willie, I don't know. Texas.
I don't think Texas is great. I really don't.
I don't. But just that you some buy this, some don't. The committee is looking at this in the second round for Rick Barnes. And on top, to me, that's the expectation of winning in the tournament, which I mean, across the board, has not been good. What, two Elite Eights in his career? In what's been a great career. It's time to take this team to be a great team. They need to get past the Sweet 16.
Okay.
We've seen that. And that to me is a fair expectation for a team that has been among the teams that you would expect to be there all season long.
I like their path. Like it's going to be a big,
I do too.
The St. Peter's, look, we know about St. Peter's, mm-hmm. Kentucky fans are still having the cold sweats just hearing the name St. Peter's. St. Peter's. Whoa. Flashbacks. But they should be fine against that. Come on. And then Texas. It's an interesting story because Rick Barnes was at Texas for a long time. But if you look at Texas' team, I really think Tennessee will D them up. I like their path to the Sweet 16. Creighton is the interesting one to me because you hear the name Creighton, it doesn't like install fear in you.
They turned it on.
They're really good. They have beaten UConn. Like they they can beat big time teams. That would be interesting. But all things said, I think their path to the Elite Eight is doable there. I think they would be favored in all of the games, right? As long as they don't have the big just lay the egg. That's the nightmare. Like when they had the game in Nashville last week where they just couldn't throw it in the ocean, the Tennessee fans are like, see, we do this every year, right? And that is a painful reminder that can happen.
So we've seen how they've played. We've seen how they played like out of the last two games. Mm-hmm. The Kentucky game is different than the way they played against Mississippi State, of course. But it's just the two losses, not the same, but the starts to the game and then how the Mississippi State game went. You know, they need to come out ready to go. And look, Dalton Knecht is the sharpshooter and the player, the smooth player that can just take over the entire tournament. He can be the face of the tournament this year. Everyone's going to point to Zach Edey. He can be that guy.
Yeah, he can. Looking at this, you know, because you said you believe this is the best team that Rick Barnes has had. I tend to think the team with Schofield, what was that, the 17-18 team?
Okay.
They end up losing. Yep. No, it was the the 18-19 team when they end up losing the Sweet 16 to Purdue.
Right.
End up losing
in overtime.
I thought that team, to me, was the best team that Rick Barnes has had. What differs this team from that team? Why do you think? Is it just Dalton Knecht?
Because it's him, but
they had, you know, Williams on their team who was an NBA player, and they had some really good guys on that
team.
This
is way different. Uh-huh. This guy's way different. I think the missing piece, Mace, over the last couple of seasons has been they've been swapping up who's going to be that guy to take the shot. Mm-hmm. You know, create the shot and be the guy. Hit the dagger. They've got that dude. Mm-hmm. And then they have Meshack coming off the bench who can D up. I mean, I love his aggression and defense. They can play and win different ways. Unlike, again, I mentioned Bama. Their defense is just not there. Tennessee can play that type of game. They need some inside play consistently. Mm-hmm. But they also have to get the shots. They've got to get the touches inside. And I think they can do that too. They can manufacture the inside game when they want to. Sometimes they don't get the shots. If you look at some of the games that they've lost, the inside game is not necessarily on the stat sheet popping out to you. You know, four attempts, five attempts. They need to find some rhythm in that area. But I think the difference for me is yes, it's Dalton. It starts with Dalton Knecht. Mm-hmm. And again, I just go back to the age of some of these players now due to the COVID year. Older guys, but 23 years old and first team All-American, AP. I mean, that is the X factor. And he was watching him. He has such a rhythm and flow, and there's a smooth part of his game that I don't think that year in and year out they've had that type of player. And he's just different. He makes this team different.
5 full years of college basketball. 5 full years for Vescovy, Josiah, Jordan, James, all with Tennessee.
So it's a more veteran-led team. But then you add Dalton Knecht in it, that makes it even a much better team.
By the way, still, I don't think that was the right thing to do in retrospect. Nothing we can do about it now, but giving everybody all the extra years because they missed the tournament the one year. That just, it's not right. It's not fair to all the kids that were in high school at the time that are getting log jammed because of this. Like, I see Tyron Lawrence is in the transfer portal.
That's a great point.
He's still allowed to play? Hey. I mean, how many years are we giving people? It's ridiculous.
I'm sorry to hit the different topics here, but you mentioned the portal. Ridiculous that the portal opened up on Monday.
Come on. It's so dumb. I mean,
you have assistant coaches in the tournament right now that are worried about the portal. I mean, in my opinion, you've got the coaches who are saying that they're not going to the NIT because they'd rather focus on the portal to improve their team than actually go play in the NIT. It is so stupid that they have the transfer. Move it back. There's a 45-day window. Move it back to the Final Four. Like that week, whatever you want to do when these teams are out and the Final Four teams are in there, who cares? But you have all of these different coaches that are focused on Thursday, Friday, and on Monday, the day after you get the bracket, the portal's open. It's just so stupid.
I completely agree. So Tennessee, a lot of pressure here. Mm-hmm. Do they get to the Final Eight? Because Here, like to me, after it was over last year, when they beat Duke, I mean, beat Duke and went to the Sweet 16 with Ziegler getting the ACL, right?
Yes, yes.
And knowing that they hit a wall in their season last year, right? Even though they were, what, number one, number two, everybody thought, okay, this is the one. And then they really slumped at the end of the season. Going into the tournament, if I'd have told at every tennis event, you're going to beat Duke and make the Sweet 16 without Ziegler, would you have taken it? That was my question, even though they got beat in the Sweet 16. So if I pose the same question now, let's say they lose to Purdue in the Elite Eight, is that a good season for Tennessee basketball? Or is that, disappointing, a failure, which a lot of people to say? It's a failure. I mean, they didn't win at all. It's a failure.
I think that's that's over the top, of course. It's a good season. But I think that in retrospect, it's not if you lose, it's how you lose.
Okay.
And, yeah, and that does matter for Rick Barnes. If guys are just missing open shots, to me, that's not on Rick Barnes. If they go cold and they're open and they're just not on, that's not a Rick Barnes. However, it's time to make sure that the mindset and the team is locked in and ready to go. This team can do that. This team can be a Final Four team. I think that's the difference in the mindset of the fans, which is fair. Not if you lose, but how you lose. And if you go out and lay an egg against Purdue after seeing them head to head, and seeing how this team played against them previously, yeah, I mean, to me, it's a different feeling on how that game goes. It's not just if you lose in the Elite Eight. I mentioned just get past the Sweet 16 and then see what happens. And if you have an easier path than that, then I think the expectations go up even more.
Now, Hutt, let's switch to a little football here.
Obviously,
Titans, there are several different topics we can go here, but I'm going to go the draft. The Titans have the 7th pick. Obviously, everybody knows that. They need a tackle. They need just about everything. Should they, because now there's talk of them potentially moving out of the 7th, moving down. First question, should they move out of the 7th pick? And then if they do, how far down can they go?
Well, it depends on, number one, how many first rounders do you actually have graded in this group? I'm spitballing here. I wouldn't move as far down. I wouldn't move past a spot where you think Brock Bowers is going to be drafted. To me, that's you have to leave with at least Brock Bowers.
You have the potential of getting him, or you think, well, the next team, if we get above them, then we know at least the next team below us will be drafting more than likely Bowers.
Well, I mean, like, to me, like, just spit the 11th pick right now is Minnesota, correct? Mm-hmm. I think that's right. They've had two first rounders, and you have the 7th pick. If they're really high on J.J. McCarthy, like people are talking about, that would be either the 3rd or the 4th quarterback off the board. And you're sitting at 7. To me, that's the range that Minnesota would get unless they want to jump ahead and go to, like, Arizona range at number 4. If you're at 7 and McCarthy's there and he's beloved by a couple of teams, they're in a great spot to move back. You're going to get multiple picks. You're setting yourself up for the future, which is what they should be doing right now. Passing on an elite player, comparing Alt, for instance, who in many mock drafts is available at 7, comparing Alt to future left tackles that you can go and draft in the first round in 2025. I haven't heard that discussion. Again, they've got to have a guy. They've got to have their guys they develop, Will Levis. That struggle of, do we grab the franchise left tackle or do we grab future first round picks and other franchise players, allow a team to jump up and get a quarterback? That's the only way I'm trading down, is if a team is coming up for a quarterback. I'm not trading down for any other position that are come through with offers, because you're not going to get the same haul and the same return and the overpay that teams do year in and year out for the position, Mace. How far can you go down? Mm-hmm. I'd say you've got to be in the top 11, top 12. Because when I say Bowers, I'm saying they draft Bowers. You can't leave with without Brock Bowers, and I don't know where he slots in, maybe later than that. But the need for tight end is, to me, secondary to what we're seeing at wide receiver and what we're seeing at offensive tackle, personally. And that's as far down as I would go, just based on the type of player that I would be looking for.
All right, we're going to workshop this thing as we get closer. There's plenty of time to strategize, because I do think this is a big thing that could go down to the wire on, I mean, actually minutes before their pick, right? Actually thinking about this.
Just briefly, that day, like the A.J. Brown trade was negotiated at noon on the day of the draft.
Wow. You wouldn't surprise me if you told me it was even later in the afternoon than that.
Yeah, but it was started around noon. Okay. But the money was there. I'm talking about just the actual trade, because you're going through scenarios. And teams don't necessarily know. They can't just assume that players are going to. But they do have to go through kind of their own mocks to figure out who they would go after and when. Mm-hmm. And that's whenever the phone would be buzzing quite a bit. Like that, it is down to the wire, because you go through scenarios and you have to figure out what you're willing to give up for the future in order to go get your guy and how much you love that guy.
At any time, did Mike Vrabel stand on the table and say, do not do this, from noon until the time they actually did this?
Well, Willie, that's why I say, like, the idea that he didn't know. I mean, the money itself has to be negotiated. You're not trading for A.J. Brown unless you know he's going to sign a long-term deal. And you're not doing that within the 10 minutes that the Titans are on the clock. And the Titans aren't just deciding they're going after Treylon Burks in 4 minutes or whenever they make the trade official. You know, like that takes a lot more time. The decision makers in that room knew what was going down whenever the video hit and Robinson was on the phone. And if they didn't like it, if Amy didn't like it, she wouldn't let him on the phone. She's sitting right there.
It is a big moment in history, for sure.
Yes.
Hutt, we'll talk again next week. Enjoy the tournament. We'll see how our brackets are doing 1 week from today.
The ball is tipped. One shiny moment.
There you go. Jonathan Hutton joining us here. Hot mic with Hutton and Withrow. When we come back, I want to continue with this question of, what do you think for Tennessee? If I told you they're going to make the Elite Eight and then lose to either Purdue or somebody else, what would you think? Good season or very disappointing failure? What word would you use? 615-737-1025. Let us know. Our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You can do the old-fashioned phone call, too. We'd love to hear from you. Jump on in. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more here on Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace.